When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong. Is there aught we hold in common with the greedy parasite who would lash us into serfdom and would crush us with his might? Is there anything left to us but to organize and fight? For the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong. It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made. But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong. We must fight to save the planet so our kids can carry on. She is raped for corporate profit while we struggle to be strong. Now we have to change our habits so that life can be prolonged while the union strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
Greetings, fellow workers and listeners to Wally Radio. This is our monthly get-together to record our broadcast. And I'm going to start off with introducing some of the folks around the table, or all of the folks around the table. And to my left is fellow worker Marilyn. Introduce yourself.
Hello, listeners. My name is Marilyn. I'm a Wobbly and proud of it. And I am a retired mental health worker. I go by she, them.
And my name is fellow worker Noah. I'm the branch secretary of the Tacoma IWW. I've been in the union for the past 3.5 years, and I've also been a longtime co-host of WOB Radio and our in-house producer as well. Go ahead, fellow worker Al.
Hello. Hey, guys. Hello, gals. And howdy to all my non-binary friends and pals. I'm a retired nurse. I joined the IWW 71 or 72. And my pronouns are he, his, and him.
My name is Lynn, and I've been with the IWW, whose moniker is the Wobblies. I've been with them for about 5 years, and then I was a member for a few years before that, too. I'm the granddaughter and the niece and the daughter of longshoremen, proud union men, and I've been in several unions throughout my career. My main career things that I did were I was a social worker and I was a medical interpreter. So currently I'm part of the Retired Public Employees Council, which is part of AFSCME, and so I carry on the union flag even though I'm retired.
And back to me, I'm fellow worker Gordon. I live in Bremerton. I'm a member of the Tacoma General Membership Branch, and I'm a retired shipyard worker. That's why the Bremerton address. And I was a member of the IAM and AW for 30 years, and now I've been a Wobbly since 2008. So it's a proud tradition, and I have a great bunch of fellow workers to organize with.
And fellow worker Marilyn is going to be reading us the preamble to our Constitution. All right, take it away.
The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. Between these two classes, the struggle must go on until the workers of the world organize as a class, take possession of the means of production, abolish the wage system, and live in harmony with the earth. We find that the centering of the management of industries into fewer and fewer hands makes the trade unions unable to cope with the ever-growing power of the employing class. The trade unions foster a state of affairs which allows one set of workers to be pitted against another set of workers in the same industry, thereby helping defeat one another in wage wars. Moreover, the trade unions aid the employing class to mislead the workers into the belief that the working class have interests in common with their employers. These conditions can be changed and the interest of the working class upheld only by an organization formed in such a way that all its members in any one industry, or in all industries if necessary, cease work whenever a strike or lockout is on in any department thereof, thus making an injury to one an injury to all. Instead of the conservative model, a fair day's wage for a fair day's work, we must inscribe on our banner the revolutionary watchword, abolition of the wage system. It is the historic mission of the working class to do away with capitalism. The army of production must be organized not only for everyday struggle with capitalists, but also to carry on production when capitalism shall be overthrown. By organizing industrially, we are forming the structure of a new society within the shell of the old. Knowing, therefore, that such an organization is absolutely necessary for emancipation, we unite under the following set of guidelines and principles and rules.
Thank you, fellow worker Marilyn. Jumping off into our show today, as always, we like to start with labor news to keep our listeners informed about what's going on in the world of labor, both here at home and across the country, and even across the world if we can get the headline. Fellow worker Al, yeah. Did you want to talk about the NEA?
NEA, that's the National Education Association. I'll tell you what's happening to the union.
Mm-hmm.
They're not trying to form a union. They have a union.
Okay.
The union, the NEASO, which would be National Education Association.
Probably staff organization.
There you go, right there. They've been around for years. But they are the body that negotiates with the National Education Association. And what happened? I think the contract ended May 31st. And prior to that date, there's been ongoing negotiations for the new contract for the 300 plus workers who work for the NEA in Washington, D.C. You have the union bosses and someone who does the work for them. And that's these folks. So it appeared that no progress was being made on the basic three issues, which would be wages, conditions, and benefits. So it's time for the big NEA convention in Philadelphia, I believe it was. And the first day of the convention, the NEASO said, we're going to strike. You haven't helped. You haven't bargained seriously. You're screwed around with us, and we don't like it. So, no work was done for the convention, which was a big disappointment to the union bosses, who expected Joe Biden to show up to give a pitch. And by the way, he is the potential candidate. He is the candidate, the vice presidential candidate, Walz.
Mm-hmm.
He's an NEA member.
No.
He was before he went to become governor, I guess. Yeah, so they're supposed to be on the side of the workers. Biden did not cross the picket line, not address the group. Pardon?
I say good.
Yeah, and it was a big disappointment to the folks who were going to swat around and say, ooh, aren't we cool? He didn't show. So, the NEA Board of Directors and its executive officers, I will say, were vindictive.
Mm.
The first thing they did is, well, they're locked out, so we're not going to pay them.
Mm.
And we're going to remove their health benefits.
Wow.
They sent out a press release for that. The next day, the Kaiser Family Foundation, Kaiser's an HMO, published that online, and the ripples spread. The day after that, what's her name now? The head of the NEA. Said, I'm sorry, changed our mind, you can have your health care back. When it turned out, I mean, there are people who were seriously ill, and they needed their insurance. And they had, potential or actual serious difficulties because their union took away their health benefits. So within 24, 48, 72 hours, they got it back.
What about their wages?
Well, we're coming to that. Okay. This is just the first thing that happened.
Okay.
No, they didn't get paid for, a month or more. Actually, I don't know what they have actually down because...
I actually have a note on this really quickly, too, because I was also doing research on this article. I'm looking at the NAA Staff Union, so you got the acronym right, fellow worker Gordon. They were locked out for 6 weeks, and just recently, on August the 15th, they got a tentative agreement, and then they ratified the tentative agreement on August the 21st, and that will last them through the rest of 2024 through 2027.
It's a three-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did they get their back wages?
I'm going to ask about that.
Well, I don't know, because I haven't found a source. Yes, of course they'll get their money back. But I would say unilaterally, you can't do that. It's an unfair labor practice to take away stuff that is already in the previous contract.
But since the contract expired, are they taking advantage of that?
They tried to. And no, there's an unfair labor practice that will work its way through the system.
Yeah. I'm confused. Wait, I forgot we were recording. About union bosses are with the management.
Well, they are management.
Yeah.
How could they be union bosses if they're?
Well, that's the whole problem. That's why the IWW organizes in a different way than the AFL-CIO and other unions do. We organize by industry. We don't give a damn about trade. What trade barrier you have. And it's ironic, and we've discussed this before in the context of nonprofits, but one would think that if you were working for a union, which is basically a corporation, and it has tax structures and it pays wages, that working for a union, they'd be happy to have you unionized, but they're not. And this goes on in pretty much all the unions.
So you're not... Okay, so they're actually working for the union, in a union.
They put out press releases.
I thought they were union people have union bosses.
They are.
Okay, well, I don't get this.
I know
that's what makes this so ironic, I suppose, if that's the right word.
It is.
That's what makes it so pathetic.
Right. So just to clarify, the union hires staff members in order to help do a lot of the extracurricular work, if you will, that comes with having a legally functioning union, like finances, things like that. And the staff are considered employees of the union organization. A lot of unions do have unionized staff. I believe the IWW also has staff at GHQ that are also paid for by the union and are unionized.
Right.
But it does create this structure where the people who are hiring for the union essentially become managers of the workers that they hire. And even so, there's a separate union within the organization of the union specifically for those staff members.
And traditionally, I have to add that unions are among some of the worst offenders as far as recognizing their employees as union people. Just like some of the big name nonprofits like 350 and
Greenpeace.
You'd think that they would be amenable to having unionized workers, but they are not.
No way.
They are not. So this is an ironic situation, and we bring it to the listener's attention specifically to show that trade unions are not democratic. And if they're not even going to allow their employees to organize, then they're kind of hypocritical too.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose now is the time to introduce this. just by making first of all, I want to go back to something you said about the work that they do. Because... the NEASO was not working, whoever's left in the office had to do the work themselves.
Which puts them in the position where they're going to have to be scabs, essentially.
Absolutely, they were scabs.
Mm-hmm.
And in front of the convention hall, or in front of the their office, the NEA office in D.C. I don't know what it's called, but it was this 18-foot rat.
Oh!
Where the sign says, don't be a scab.
Yeah, that's Scabby the Rat.
Scabby the Rat, yeah, yeah.
And the funniest thing is that that scab labor that was being used by the NEA, the National Education Association, correct? They used scab labor to send out Tim Walz's announcement for vice presidency on the Kamala Harris campaign. And they posted on their Instagram, they basically marked up the entire announcement showing how scab labor made it in the first place.
Mm. Interesting.
So, yeah.
So I wanted to add this thing about the staff being locked out, so they didn't perform their duties, mm-hmm. which means that the people, management, still left in the building had to do this, and they basically dug up old press releases. They could write their own.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They wanted to have a big deal for Biden and now Walz, video advertising. They had to hire scab videographers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could not do it themselves. It's a point to let us know that without the workers, the bosses don't have much fun.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. So just let me add this. It was hard for me to track all this stuff down because depending on what website you went to, it changed. But the top earners, who are the board of directors of the NEA, well, let's start with the president, Becky Pringle. She makes, 22-23, she made
$495,787. Are you kidding me?
No,
wow.
No.
That's pretty good. No wonder they don't want a union in there.
the NEA executive director is Kim Anderson, and she makes $429,294. These numbers come from something called an LM2. Mm-hmm. Labor management. This is the labor department. Makes everyone in a union, makes every union file papers, reports. How much? Who's in charge? How much do they get paid? Right. How much money you got in the bank? What are your liabilities?
So that's Bureau of Labor Statistics stuff, yeah. Right there, mm-hmm. which is gold.
Let's see. Pringle. That would be Becky, NEA president. She makes about 8.5 times more than the average public school teacher.
Wow.
Her salary has increased by over $64,000 since she became the NEA president in 2021. I mean, what's that, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
She got a $20,000 raise every year, I guess. To me, that's a lot of money. But these are employees who live and work in the Washington, D.C. area. And it's really expensive, I hear.
Yeah.
I'd actually like to raise an interesting question here. And I think that this is probably the question that underlies this whole story that we're presenting for our listeners. And it is very interesting to see what happens when workers who work for unions, for those organizations, try to organize. Because this kind of situation with what the National Education Association and their unionized workers is going through, as fellow worker Gordon pointed out, this happens at a lot of other major trade unions and also at other nonprofits as well. What happens when this very progressive organization that's specifically fighting for something I think we would all consider a common good in this country, what happens when the people who work for them try to organize? Mm-hmm. And it kind of creates this interesting situation of the same hypocrisy that we call out in employers or the Chamber of Commerce or whoever is getting replicated within the organization that is meant to challenge those organizations. And I just think it's very interesting. We ought to do a roundtable like that for our listeners in the future. We could probably dig up more case studies.
And I've got two more quick points, and we should move on. Other top earners in the NEA. The Secretary Treasurer makes a few bucks over $400,000 a year. The Vice President, Princess Moss makes $397,325. Mm-hmm. NEA officers and staff salaries and benefits include the highest paid employee of the NEA headquarters is the Executive Director, John Wilson, who received $296,950. That was several years ago. So, to round this out, By the way, what's the average teacher's salary in the state of Washington?
Yeah, what is?
Well, it's about $23 an hour.
Jesus.
Which, yeah.
Can't buy a Winnebago on that money.
No.
And so, but the average teacher's salary in the state of Washington works out to about $86,000. $86,804, but that's somebody's posting, and it's not, I didn't check these.
Well, I'm glad their number got called, and I'm glad that they reached an agreement.
Absolutely.
And I'll get to the results of that, except I want to add something else. There are competing unions mm-hmm. for teachers.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the FT.
FTA.
AFT. No,
Federation of Teachers.
AFT, American Federation.
American Federation of Teachers, yes. And
Shanker's
old Randy Weingarten is the president of the AF, the American Federation of Teachers. She makes merely $543,000 a year. Wow. $562,000, yeah. Throwing the change. And she gets retirement and other compensation.
So I think we get the picture.
That the people on the top of the pile usually get more than the people on the bottom.
Yep.
I guess we know that. The final thing for me for the moment is there was a tentative contract. It was overwhelmingly support approved by the membership, including there will be step increases and salary increases in all 3 years, about 4%, I guess. They will receive 8 weeks of fully paid new parent leave, male or female.
That's a good contract.
That's a great thing, yeah. And they're going to double the amount of active student loan payments. The union is helping employees pay off their college bills, I guess. Conditions. Something called better time back for overtime worked. And it was not explained, but I think they got to compensate you either with time off or more money for working overtime. And they got serious about this one. They codified COVID-19 protections. It's now in the contract. And encouraged people to maintain flexibility for telework. You didn't have to go to the office every day, particularly during a pandemic. So it seems money and conditions and benefits, they got their health insurance back.
Yay,
is right.
Was it retro, so it fixed that month that they didn't?
I couldn't find any. Yeah. Nobody said that, so I don't know.
It would be catastrophic if they had that gap.
Yeah. Okay. I think...
Thank you, man.
That's a picture. You can think about that one for a while and wonder what's up with that. Mm-hmm. But the union, I'm going to say it, the union bosses were embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. Well, they should be.
They should be. And that's what the members of the NEA staff organization said. You should be embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. You know, shame.
That's why they got the rat out there.
Exactly.
You know. So anyway... it was a surprising struggle, and I think that the workers were successful by using they had not just a solidarity amongst themselves, the 300 people from the office, but people around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or members around the country, but members of other unions as well said, wait, this isn't right, you know.
That's right.
And we've seen where the gravy's dripping, so let's let some of it trickle down to our fellow workers.
Our second bit of labor news today, this is coming out of Israel in the context of the current war and genocide in Gaza. This is according to the Associated Press in an article by Tia Goldenberg. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is pushing back against a new wave of pressure to reach a ceasefire deal in Gaza after hundreds of thousands of Israelis protested and went on strike. And the U.S. President Joe Biden said he needed to do more after nearly 11 months of fighting. The big point of this article and other articles that have been released in the past couple of days is that a lot of Israelis are pissed off that they discovered 6 more dead hostages. Netanyahu keeps insisting that he will make his demands met with Hamas in the Gaza Strip. But a lot of Israelis are getting tired of this conflict. Again, this has been going on for 11 months now. This current conflict has been going on for 11 months.
I was going to say, 70 years this has been going on. But
yes.
You're right.
But the current war that's going on since October 7th.
The one we get to watch on TV now.
But a lot of Israelis are beginning to call him on it. They're beginning to call his bluff. And there's been huge protests in Tel Aviv over those, specifically those 6 hostages that they discovered dead. The Israelis poured into, and this is quoting the article, Israelis had poured into the streets late Sunday in grief and anger in what appeared to be the largest protest since the start of the war. The families and much of the public blamed Netanyahu, saying the hostages could have been returned alive in a deal with Hamas. A rare general strike was held across the country for one day this previous Monday. Just for our listeners, today is the 7th that we're recording this. Late Monday, several thousand demonstrators gathered outside Netanyahu's private home in central Jerusalem, chanting, "Deal now," and were carrying coffins draped in the Israeli flag. Scuffles broke out when police snatched away the coffins, and several protesters were arrested. Thousands more marched outside Netanyahu's Likud party in Tel Aviv, according to Israeli media. There's another article that also specifies that an Israeli court ordered the general strike to end within a day. So the strike had started the evening of Monday, and then a court had ordered that the strike be broken up and ended sometime on Tuesday. So it was really brief, but that is incredibly rare, and it was called for by the largest Israeli labor union, the Histadrut, and ended, the general strike ended after a day, essentially. But yeah, that's a pretty big escalation of what's going on. I know that we've talked about what's happening to the people in Gaza and the horrible things, the massive amount of civilian deaths. A lot of people have rightly called it a genocide. But even within Israel, even within Israel's right wing, they're already beginning to call for a ceasefire deal and a transfer of hostages, probably for material aid and the rest of the Gaza Strip back, would be my imagination of it.
And there have been what they call refuseniks for years within the Israeli society. Men and women who refuse to serve in the military. They don't say that they have bone spurs or anything like that. They just say, no, we will not go, and they go to jail rather than serve.
Yeah, there's been a lot more of those since October 7th, actually.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a large influx, and the Israeli court system is struggling to try and deal with it because a lot of people just won't go. Yeah.
Good.
So I'd like to make a small addition to that.
Go ahead.
Which is, next month, October, the olive harvest starts.
Oh, yeah.
And that, there's a thing on my phone this morning that I wake up miserable and I go to bed miserable reading this stuff. But there was testimony by people who, that is their life. Mm-hmm. They make olive oil for themselves. They make olive oil to sell. They make olive oil to give away. And one of the problems that they're anticipating, because it's happened in the past, is that Israeli settlers who are crossing the border illegally are interfering with the harvest. They've been known to destroy trees. They have been known to kill people who are harvesting olives. So think about it. If you know a place and it's available, Palestinian olive oil is expensive, but I hear it's really good. And it's part of their culture, their history, and it's part of their economy. And the harvest starts next month.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the few things that they're allowed to produce and export, from what I'm aware. I mean, they can't even import certain quantities of metal or even concrete into the Gaza Strip or the West.
School supplies, 2x4s, bandages. I mean, people have been killed trying to...
Well, and the Israeli army has bulldozed hundreds and hundreds of ancient olive trees.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Courtesy of the Caterpillar Corporation, USA.
That's who killed Rachel Corrie.
Yeah.
Another American was actually recently killed in the West Bank.
Yes, and she was from Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Israel is currently under a lot of heat, even within its right-wing factions. People in Israel are also pissed about the fact that the Israeli military keeps ending up killing hostages or sometimes their own soldiers by the indiscriminate nature of their operations and their bombings. A lot of people are mad about that.
One final clarification. When we're talking about a general strike, that means that all the workers go out in every industry, and it's one of the main goals of the IWW. If we, because you know, in the United States, unions scab on each other, unfortunately, but with a general strike, that means everybody's out, and except for necessary things like milk for kids and certain medical establishments remain open, because that's the enlightened thing to do. But a general strike means everybody's out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that clarification.
So, is there a call for another general strike?
There was only one that occurred earlier this week, and it only lasted a day until a court shut it down, and then the police broke it up. But there's probably going to be more calls similar to that, would be my guess. A lot of people in Israel are getting really tired of the war, even the people who were previously for it. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, now that it's coming up on the one-year anniversary of when it started.
So stay tuned, listener.
Absolutely. Next month's episode should be interesting.
They're tired of him, too.
Oh, yeah. People are mad at Netanyahu. Everyone's mad at Netanyahu right now. But yeah, that's pretty much the end of my news article. Of course, we'll keep you updated on these stories in the coming episodes. All right, fellow workers. And now we're moving on to our roundtable section, where we pick a topic and have a roundtable discussion about it with fellow Wobblies. My assistant secretary, Willow, and I have recently gone to our union's general convention in Toronto. And general convention for the IWW is basically the national meeting of branch representatives from all across the country and Canada. So I got to represent the Tacoma branch on a national level during convention in Toronto, and I just have a little report back about that. So we got into convention, actually, we got into convention right on time. We left Seattle at 11:10 p.m., and we got there at 7 a.m., because we're going over a few time zones, and convention started at 9 a.m. on Saturday. So we literally just got off the plane, hit the train, went to Tartu College, where it was hosted this year, and we sat down, and within an hour, convention had started. A lot of the topics of discussion that we were covering were things along the lines of referendums. So internally in the IWW during convention, people bring forward, apologies for the use of language, we bring forward resolutions that the national body of the union can consider whether or not we want to change a part of our constitution or a part of our bylaws, or how we conduct our organizing work, our financial work, things like that. And there were some pretty cool resolutions this year. Some of them were a little contested. As you can imagine with any elected body, you know, you can probably imagine how people argue in Congress. And the IWW is a little bit more respectful to each other when we're discussing resolutions. But as always, there's conflict and there's disagreement about it. But yeah, it was a really cool experience, though, because as representatives of the Tacoma branch at convention for the entire union, it was really cool to see the wide diversity of the different kinds of Wobblies that are in this organization and the different parts of America and Canada of where they're from. You know, different branches are dealing with their own specific difficulties in terms of things like getting organizing campaigns off the ground or trying to manage their budget or trying to get, you know, some kind of information from general headquarters, things like that. Because of our rapid growth in membership, it was really cool to see just how many people also turned out for convention as well. I'm pretty sure that with the exception of a very small handful of branches who probably didn't meet the quota for even having their own delegates, or just because of a lack of transportation, or because a branch will sometimes authorize another branch to carry their votes at convention. But we had a really big turnout. If I had to guess, it's probably close to 100 people at convention, not even including the observers from other branches who showed up as well. We got to meet members of our executive board who make kind of higher level decisions as to how the
union... So you're talking about 100 delegates.
If I had to guess, in total population of people that attended was probably around 100. I think in terms of delegates, it would have been about 70.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I'm just spitballing a number, but we had a wide variety of people show up. And it was really cool to meet all the people from the different branches, too, because, like I was saying, you know, every branch at every location in the U.S. or Canada are all kind of going through different issues. Organizing in Winnipeg, Canada is probably going to look a little different than how labor organizing works in Tacoma, Washington, or in any other part of the United States. So it was really interesting to hear what kind of industries workers were interested in getting involved in or organizing. There were even just conversations about how some branches do salting work kind of on their own time, being like, hey, fellow worker, why don't you go join at that factory and strike up a conversation? You know, it looks like they get paid well and your resume lines up with it. So, yeah, I think in terms of... I think if there was only one negative thing that we got, it was probably just the travel, honestly. I haven't flown in a plane in years, and I forgot what turbulence felt like. So the flight there was actually really good. The weather was fine. It wasn't super windy. I was just like, ooh, I'm in an airplane again for the first time. This feels weird. But the flight back, I think we probably hit like three or four pockets of just bad turbulence, especially when we were flying through Montana into the Rocky Mountains. I forgot how a plane shakes, and that's normal, and actually that accidents in the air are very rare, but cut to me just white-knuckling my chair, just being like, we're 2 hours from Seattle, we're 2 hours from Seattle.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hated it for like a solid hour.
That's why they serve booze, fellow worker.
I drank on the way there, but I couldn't drink on the way back because I was trying to get sleep on the plane on the way there. I think I only got like 45 minutes. And then I had a full 24-hour day of, I went to work, I got on the plane, we flew to Toronto, get off the train, now you're at convention.
Yeah.
And now you have to get through the first day.
So you've mentioned some differences. What are some areas where people could all align on the importance of a topic?
I think a lot of the topics of discussion where people really got along was how we want to direct our organizing work, how branches should relate to our general secretary treasurer or our general executive board, how do we make their jobs easier so that we can get our dues remittances and the information that we want as branches from the main headquarters of our union, like what's our up-to-date finances, what's our up-to-date membership numbers, what's the upcoming organizer trainings. If there isn't one locally, we can reach out to another branch and find a training that way.
So can you give me an example of a resolution along that line that passed and what it was and one that ran into difficulty?
Well, I'll tell you about the one that passed, and that passed really well. Because I think this was the highlight of convention for us. One of the resolutions that was put forward to the body of all the different representatives from every branch of the union was specifically about the conflict and genocide in Gaza. There was a resolution put forward that suggested the idea that the union should invest its finances, its organizing, its resources into organizing companies that work for the military-industrial complex so that we can potentially limit the kind of materials that go to Israel. If the government isn't going to do it, then maybe we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
We were one of the few branches that had objections to that. It's not to say that the resolution wasn't good in its spirit or in its desire to do something good for the people of Gaza, but calling for organizing campaigns specifically to slow down or stop work with that specific intention is a very big liability because it could potentially break labor law and it would have serious repercussions for the union as a whole. So we drafted a letter as a branch, and just for context, I was serving as sergeant at arms at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
I helped the chair for all 3 days to help maintain decorum, to pass out microphones and to count the votes.
And that meant you couldn't vote.
That meant that I couldn't vote. Our other fellow worker, Willow, who was there, was voting on our behalf. She had both of our votes,
okay,
so don't worry,
good.
They got represented.
So what happened with that?
So I was temporarily relieved from sergeant at arms by permission of the chair in order to read the letter from our branch, which basically said, look, if we call for these kinds of organizing campaigns, if we announce it even externally to the wider public, we're going to catch the eye of some pretty mad labor judges really quickly, because that can be interpreted as calling for industrial sabotage,
yeah,
which is illegal. Even though the IWW has a very long and proud history of it, it would be very illegal and could potentially get the union dissolved at worst case scenario.
Yeah.
So
decertified.
So I read this letter in opposition to it, and the chair was like, well, do you have any amendments that you want to make to it before your speaking time is over?
Funny you should mention that.
We didn't pre-draft a amendment to this resolution, so I asked for a 10-minute recess. The chair called it. Everyone went to break. And within a second, maybe 6 or 7 branches delegates got up from their tables, went over to where the Tacoma branch was sitting and said, we agree with you. Let's get this drafted in 10 minutes. So we went through the whole text of the resolution, figured out what parts we need to cut out in order to not run into trouble with the law. And also, we also changed some aspects of the language too. some of the language in this resolution was like, we should give to other left wing, specifically the language that they used was socialist organizations. And some branches had an objection to that because the IWW constitutionally is non-political.
That's right.
Some people use the term socialist as an umbrella for leftist, as kind of like an umbrella word, if you will. But the resolution didn't specifically state that, and we were worried that that would run us into conflict with the Constitution. So we struck that language. We also changed, there was another aspect of the language that we changed to, referring it to not apartheid, but as an occupation, because those are two different kinds of oppression, and we wanted to be clear about what we wanted to address, mm-hmm. specifically in the context of what's happening in Gaza.
What about the language about sabotage?
We ultimately struck about four paragraphs of the resolution that specifically advocated or could be
construed.
Allow me to correct myself. The paragraphs that could be construed as calling for industrial sabotage.
So what did you call for?
So we struck the four paragraphs that could be alluded to industrial sabotage, and we changed those two little parts of the language and basically left at the one paragraph that said, the IWW should invest its time, its effort, its resources, money if it can, to organizations that are already boots on the ground doing the work that we want to do to help the people of Gaza.
So that this is like what I was suggesting, like through other labor organizations,
yeah. mm-hmm.
instead of making a what could be misconstrued as a political statement.
Right.
You know, there are people in Palestinian labor organizations, and I would hazard to guess Israeli labor organization. The anarchist tradition is not dead totally in Israel.
Yeah. So we specifically left in the part of the resolution that said, look, there are already Palestinian labor organizations. We should lend our support to them. There are already other left-wing pro-Palestinian organizations. That's a language change that we made. Palestinian-led organizations that are boots on the ground, giving aid, giving health care, giving food,
yeah.
helping people get out of the Gaza Strip.
Let's support them.
Let's support those people.
Okay.
Because that would be the most effective way to invest our time mm-hmm. and our resources. So we brought that up. Anyways, recess was ended. We brought our amendment. There was only a slight bit of pushback on how we changed the language. But the four paragraphs that were taken out, I think only one person objected to. I think, to my memory, the gross majority of convention basically said, you made the right changes, now let's vote on it. And it passed with an overwhelming majority.
Good.
Wow.
So I think the highlight of that was, and this is something that we're trying to work on as a union branch as well, is kind of networking with the other branches of the union that exist in other parts of the country.
Right.
Because we had this really golden and really beautiful moment of just people from the South, the East Coast, people from the heartland, a couple of Canadian delegates helping us out at a drop of a hat because they said, there's a problem with this and we agree with you and we're going to help you work on it. It was this beautiful moment of solidarity.
That must have felt good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for me and Willow both, it was kind of like, oh, wow, there's a lot more interconnectivity to this union. We're not island branches
yes.
trying to keep the organization going.
You
We're
got
always
to see
talking to each
solidarity
other.
Solidarity in action.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that WAB Radio could be an expanding part of that network.
Mm-hmm.
Networking.
Speaking of which, I talked to a few of the branch members from Portland. The Portland GMB is interested in helping us expand our show to the Portland area.
Oh, good.
I also spoke with one of the members of the Kitsap Proto Branch, who is there representing Seattle, as we previously discussed. And they were also interested in helping us expand our show out to the Bremerton area as well. But, we talked to a lot of branches that were like, hey, we've heard about your radio show. We'd like to
wow.
talk to you more. As a
That's
matter of
good.
Fact, Ypsilanti, which is in Michigan,
yeah.
they had a podcast before we started being more active on social media with WAP Radio. I used to listen to them at my previous job at a warehouse. It's an IWW podcast through Spotify where they talk about a lot of their local campaigns.
Oh, good.
And a lot of their experiences. And I was like, you're the people from the Ypsilanti IWW podcast. And they're like, you're the people from WAB Radio. And I'm like, yes, media communications for the sake of
good.
Unionism. Let's get together and talk about
Excellent.
It sometime.
Excellent.
How
so,
did they
yeah.
know about WAB Radio?
I believe just from hearing about it from other
Social
union
media.
Branches.
Cool,
yeah.
cool. All right.
Yeah, I haven't posted much on our Facebook page lately, but we do have quite a number of followers within and without the IWW who follow WAB Radio on Facebook. And so quite a number of people have heard about us. I mean, Boston heard about us.
Ireland's heard of us, you know.
Yeah. Wisera knows who we are, which, for the context of the listener, NARA, the North American Regional Administration, represents the IWW in America and in Canada.
You mean the U.S.
and the Canada. U.S. and Canada.
And perhaps Mexico as well.
And also parts of Mexico.
Because that's North America.
Basically, everything north of the Panama Canal. And then Wisera represents specifically England, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, and I believe a couple other Western European countries, if I'm not
Which
mistaken.
Which is another way that we're different from trade unions, because mm-hmm. we're international.
Absolutely.
Truly.
Our membership goes far and wide. I mean, we literally crossed the border of a country in order to go to convention this year. And God, does Canada have a nice... the public transportation.
I was going to ask.
Let's talk about the public transportation.
I'm a New Yorker. I used to go to school on public transportation.
I haven't had good public transportation since I was a kid, and we would go visit a different European country every few years.
Wow.
Like, it reminded me of the trains of Italy, the subways of London, and... I mean, even their housing situation is about as bad as it is here in America, but there's a lot more higher density housing. It's not mm-hmm. like 5-over-1s, kind of like we have in the Proctor District, for yeah. example. It's like, oh, these are actually like huge blocks of apartments that are, you know, yeah. constructed for the benefit of the public. And I'm like, wow, Canadian socialism in quotation marks. And I'm like, right. oh, I wish we could have some of these. But no, Toronto was really pretty. I even got to visit the gay district on one of the evenings off after convention with a few other queer and trans fellow workers. And that was really fun. But yeah, convention was really cool because, and again, just to state the point one more time, the big thing that we as the Tacoma branch got out of it was the realization that we are much more interconnected as branches. We're not constantly beholden to a central organization.
Yes.
We have our own autonomy.
Fellow worker Arthur, back mm-hmm. in the day, would constantly remind us that we didn't have to ask them and tell them every single little thing.
Right.
That we were semi-autonomous and we had a lot of authority on our own.
Mm-hmm. As long as their portion of the dues get sent out, and as long as we file our LM-4 every year, and as long as we still have a branch meeting, after that, you can do whatever the heck you want.
Yeah.
So, it was really cool. And we really hope to follow up with a lot of the branches coming up soon, because in the third week of October, our branch is kind of spearheading a campaign to get all the secretaries together in one room and say, we had a great time at convention, it was nice to meet a bunch of you, but like... what kind of network do we want to have between branches in order to bolster each other better? Because, yeah, we talk a lot about what's going on, but what actual solidarity and support can we give? Mm-hmm. Mutual aid, or yeah. maybe, you know, if you have an OT-101 organizer who lives near your branch and a branch needs an OT-101 soon, get that person in touch with them.
Yeah.
So it was a really good convention, and I think the gross majority of everybody that was there had a great time. And
did you hear anything from the other branches, whether they had an associate secretary or they were just had the one?
That was actually another interesting point. I didn't get to spend that much time speaking to other branches during convention because I was busy being sergeant at arms. But Willow did manage to talk to other branches about how they carry out their meetings. And I wish I got more detail from her. Some branches do combine secretary and treasurer, mm-hmm. which is how the original bylaws kind of stated. It's like you have to have a branch secretary treasurer, but some branches like ours choose to break that up because we recognize that it's easier to democratize the workload of like, hey, this is a task that needs to get done, this is an officer's position, who wants to do it, who wants to run for it. Some branches, I believe, also have assistant secretaries the way that I do. Some of them even have a wider classification of officers, both elected and unelected, just to give people more opportunities to be engaged. And I'm interested in doing that with our branch as well, because I think that especially with a lot of our new members who are coming in and kind of getting used to the
They'd like a role.
Mm-hmm. They want a role to play. I mean, we just got a... Yes, fellow worker Lynn?
I was just thinking about having an open house for new members to come. Have we ever done that? Because we don't know any of the new members.
Yeah.
We haven't met them in person. There's so many that are long distance.
I think that's a great idea, frankly. I know I and I'll hold myself accountable to it. Editor's note, I'm still going to send out a link to everybody to try and get a art night put together, because that's an idea that I got from the local chapter of the DSA, because they have regular art nights. And it'd be cool to get together and make a new union banner, mm-hmm. just so that we can have a chance to work on something that isn't so serious all the time.
Yeah.
And just a chance to get to know each other.
Well, I think 350 would also lend their space for that if we wanted.
Mm-hmm. I know that where we usually meet, which is Hilltop Solidarity, can be pretty busy. So, yeah, we can definitely talk to 350 about it. And if there are any fellow listeners out there who are interested, you can also join us, hopefully at an upcoming art night. But, I think that was one of the interesting things that I noticed with other branches was they do carry out their business a little bit differently depending on what's the level of engagement with their membership? What specific projects or tasks do fellow workers want to take on more than others? Like, I mean, as a branch secretary, I'll be honest, there's always going to be boring paperwork once you reach a certain level of responsibility. You know, sending off delegate forms to GHQ, or like trying to have a sit-down conversation with new fellow workers who probably have busy lives of their own, or trying to make sure that, you know, certain organizing campaigns or projects are still being followed up on. But I think the little gold nugget that a lot of branches seem to have in common is they find ways to make it work. They all have their own system of making sure that fellow workers stay engaged and are still interested in getting organized.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is interesting is that there's no, in our structure, there's no president or vice president or chair mm-hmm. person. I think that's interesting. It starts with secretary, which is pretty high responsibility, and then the treasurer also.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's like, and then any other offices we want. If we wanted to, this is a committee, informal committee, but it's a
media
committee.
/WOB Radio.
Yeah.
It's mostly WOB Radio, but yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. That's the other thing, interesting thing too, is the different kinds of committees. You know, a lot of people, for example, were asking Tacoma, like, well, we've heard of WOB Radio, but we've also heard of your strategy committee as well. What was the idea behind that? How did that get started? You know, what exactly does a strategy committee do? Because we have a committee that's kind of like that, but we don't do all of the things that you do. So it was kind of this big transfer of knowledge between all mm-hmm. these different branches of like, how are you actually? How do you work?
Yeah.
Wow.
And again, it goes back to that note that Arthur Miller was talking about, which is that we kind of have a DIY aspect to the union of, outside of the stuff that's legally mandatory, it's a choose your own adventure game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I really like that about the IWW. So,
yeah. It's another example. IWW is a bottom-up organization, and most of the other trade unions with a few exceptions.
But that was definitely one of the things I've noticed, too, is that I've sat in on, like, Central Labor Council meetings and things like that, and there's definitely a more rigidly defined structure as to how things can work. It's not a steep pyramid, but there's still a little bit of a pyramid in terms of what powers officers get. Are stewards elected or unelected, depending mm-hmm. on your union? How do dues get, you know, distributed throughout the union? Where does the union invest its time and resources? The IWW is kind of, it's not a mountain-shaped structure. It's kind of more like almost like one of those English hills. Yes, we have an executive board. Yes, we have a general secretary, treasurer. Yes, we have staff at headquarters that are paid in order
to do
their
mesa.
Job.
It's a
mesa. That's perfect, yeah. We have a little bit of increase, but the power of the union itself is still very evenly distributed amongst the branches. And we definitely saw that at convention as well. Any other questions the fellow workers had, maybe?
Well, you told me about one big topic.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the difference between national and local branch activity. You sort of did talk about what democracy looks like on a national level.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really, I guess we sort of did talk about the difference between a craft union and the IWW. I guess we covered it all.
All righty.
And it sounds like you are stoked.
And one other note, when dealing with our Canadian fellow workers, we're dealing with a different set of labor laws. They're roughly similar. You know, your basic rights are very similar, but you can't run afoul of the Canadian labor laws. And in the recent past, the UK has passed really, really I'm glad that the language that you got excised did, because in the UK, you can go to jail for 14 years for handing out a pamphlet about Gaza.
Yeah.
You can. And they just passed a law, and it's under a Labour government. Well, it shows you what that that's worth.
Yeah.
But just to be mindful of the fact that our fellow workers in different parts of the world, in Mexico, you can get murdered for being a member of a union. Mm-hmm. That doesn't generally happen here, at least not since the 1950s. But what I'm getting at is that we always have to be mindful of our fellow workers from other countries and other parts of the country as to the specific challenges that they face.
Yeah.
Yeah, what kind of support we can offer to people who live under different labor laws. Some of them even more permissive, but a lot of them more restrictive as well.
Very much so.
I had a few Canadian fellow workers say that there are some aspects of their labor law that are even more stringent than America's. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the details on what, but yeah. So you do have to have that kind of perspective on it.
Well, it's a little bit difficult because we have a lot of very independent-minded people in the IWW. We have anarchists and we have revolutionary socialists. We have all kinds of people who think...
Because we're not advocating any political party.
Exactly. But what I'm getting at is that it's sort of like a leavening. You can get a lot of information from our anarchist fellow workers about their viewpoint of things. Mm-hmm. And they can be leavened and softened, if you will, by some of the outlooks of other members. So it's
the socialists and the social democrats.
Right. Yeah. It's a democratic union, small d, meaning that, you know, we really do strive to follow the principles and to not play little power games.
Yeah. Marilyn, do you want to give your environmental report?
Well, I do. Okay. This is Marilyn, and I wanted to do two things. But before I do that, I just want to give you a little positive feedback of something that's happening in the labor community. I was involved in a gathering in honor of the work that Ralph Chaplin did in the IWW. He lived in the Tacoma area, and he is the author of the song that we sang at the beginning of our session today. Ralph Chaplin wrote Solidarity Forever. Well, I was talking with the new secretary of the Pierce County Labor Council because I left my folding chair at the gravesite and he brought it to my house. And Nate Lover informed me that in approximately 1 month, the Pierce County Labor Council has bought a building on the east side in which to provide daycare to apprentices in the building trades and other trades.
That's good.
And it will be free of cost for all apprentices so that they won't have the staggering cost of childcare and they know that their children will be someplace safe and secure when they go to work.
That's excellent.
And that once they graduate from the apprentice program, the fee that they will pay for childcare will be prorated depending on their salary so that it doesn't break the bank when they first start working. And I thought that was just wonderful.
Absolutely.
That's a huge stumbling block for a lot of people trying to find a way to support and feed their families, that while they're apprentices, they can't afford the high cost of daycare. So this is a huge positive thing.
That's why you will find in apprentice programs mostly single people. Mm-hmm. When I went through the apprenticeship in the early 80s, I was one of the exceptions.
Yeah.
I had a wife and child and made it through that program. They didn't have anything like daycare.
Well, I think they're going to broaden it so that it's more than just the building trades.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. But they're starting with that. And I was just thrilled to hear that. That was a huge step.
It really makes the point that, and this is just my opinion, but this is an opinion that's also been expressed by others, that unions can provide the third space of societies. You have home, you have work, everybody has a third space. For some people that's church, for some people that's some kind of charity, for some people that's a bar. And I think that union organizations can provide those third spaces, but also the resources that we're talking about as well. Yeah. This is childcare, something that's already it might as well be considered a luxury.
I was paying so much for childcare when I was still working and my kids were young. I could have paid for 4 years of college on the cost of childcare. So I want to go on, but actually that is sort of an environmental issue. If you haven't got reliable childcare and you're trying to learn a trade, what kind of environment do you live in? So there's different types of environment. There's the ecological environment. There's the justice environment.
And you are currently listening to Radio Tacoma 101.9 FM KTAH.
And so I'm going to speak first about something that's coming up in December. And it is a week of solidarity, December 6th through December 13th. And the call is to halt all labor and stop all commissary spending within the prisons. And outside, the call is to organize demonstrations outside of jails and prisons and ICE. And we were asked to bring this forward by a group called Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, and they are incarcerated workers that have been studying the law and learned what their rights are and want to alert the public on the outside that they are pushing for their rights inside the prison. So they want people to endorse their campaign to show solidarity. And our endorsement would help lend credibility and support to the movement and rally more voices around their critical cause. And then if you feel like doing mutual aid, there is a website which is https://givebutter.com. Shut M down, S-H-U-T-E-M-D-O-W-N. We all know that a lot of the people that are in prison are there because of acts of desperation. And that refers to, really, the social climate that we have in this country and the inequity. And so they would like to not have to work for a dollar a day in the prisons, which is slavery, which is an extension of our Jim Crow and slavery. And they would like to not have to spend the little bit of money that they've got to buy necessary items like toothpaste. And I think that's pretty darn reasonable. So the action dates are December 6th through the 13th. And part of it's going to be virtual because they're locked up. But they need autonomous demonstrations outside of the jail. If you're interested in learning more or getting involved more, you should contact the Tacoma branch of the IWW and put IWOC, I-W-O-C, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, in your header, and it will get to us, and we will contact you.
Yeah, could you tell our listeners one more time what the IWOC, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, does?
Well, we communicate with people that are in prison, and we work with them to address their needs for justice, and that's what we do. We take the lead of the people imprisoned. We don't tell them what to do.
Right.
They tell us what they need.
Right, and these are union members who are in jail or are in prison.
And by the way, if you happen to be in prison or in jail and you're listening to us now, we do not have union dues for people in jail. You can be a member for free.
Thank you. And I think that it is really cool, and I know we've talked about it previously, but I'm still going to bring it up. I still think it's really cool that the IWW is willing to extend its membership and its support to people who are behind bars, because those are truly some of the most vulnerable workers that we have in our society.
Yeah, if a bar of soap costs you a full day's wage,
exactly,
you know, you have to go through the commissary system.
And the phones.
Oh, yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Just to talk to your wife or child or husband if you're incarcerated, it's just an exorbitant rate,
so the
and
next,
they know it.
The next thing I want to talk about in terms of environment is more traditionally climate-related. I want to talk about the mega warehouse that the city would like to see in the city of Tacoma slapped down on top of an aquifer. The city of Tacoma and Bridge Industrial, which is a property management company, have approved the building of a massive mega warehouse complex for South Tacoma. If built, it would have the expected size of 2.5 million square feet.
Yeesh.
And be ranked among the top 10 largest warehouses in the world.
Oh.
And bring in up to $10,000 semi-trucks and other vehicle trips a day, and eliminate 124 acres of wetland, aquifer, and green space.
Ooh.
So, the city of Tacoma did not require an environmental impact statement. It did not push for a health impact statement. They just were looking at the money. Mm-hmm. Now, Bridge Industrial, well, actually, at this point, they farmed that out. Sierra, a company called Sierra, is actually going to do the parking lot and the warehouse. There is an organization, Climate Alliance for the South Sound, and they're working to stop the mega warehouse because it's not a done deal yet. You should know that the outfit that Bridge Industrial hired to do the building, Sierra something or other, has also done a mega warehouse project in Frederickson, and they did it on a wetland. And as a result, there is flooding every year in people's backyards and businesses because they did not take into account the wetlands and what happens when they make a wetland impermeable. So, Climate Alliance for the South Sound is one of the groups that's working to stop the warehouse. If you're interested, they meet on Mondays at 6 o'clock, actually 5:30 if you want dinner, at the 350.com meeting space, which is at 311 Puyallup Avenue. And they would love to have more members in solidarity. They've been going out and letting people that would be affected by this mega warehouse. They've been canvassing and knocking on doors and letting neighbors know what is planned, because a lot of people don't even know.
Yeah.
If you have a school-age child who's been walking to school or riding their bike in the area, what are the odds that they continue to do that with 10,000 more trucks a day?
What?
Yeah, it's terrible. So I know you wouldn't hear about this in time for the next upcoming canvassing, but if you go to the Climate Alliance for the South Sound website, and if you just write in Climate Alliance for the South Sound, it will direct you to the website. You can learn about what they're doing. You can take a look at their blog. And Radio Tacoma is also carrying regular weekly twice a month shows of the CASS, otherwise known as CAS, broadcasts. So they are on every other week, new shows. And they would love you to check them out and get involved, because only through solidarity, you know, we have the numbers. They may have the money and they may have the big bucks, but that's what I wanted to tell you about today. And if you go on the website, I'm looking at a map of the place. I'm looking at what it looks like right now. And it's a beautiful meadow with flowers, but not if they pave it. So check it out. That's my environmental report for this week.
I just have a quick question for fellow worker Marilyn. Have you heard of any kind of pushback from the local labor establishment, which will probably be saying, oh, it'll bring so many jobs to the area and things like that?
No, actually there has been some good pushback. Local unions, UFCW 367 and Joint Council of Teamsters number 28 opposed the project.
Wow.
Because the jobs would not guarantee good pay, safety, or equity.
Hmm.
And robots and automation would do most of the work.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, and it's on a proposed old aquifer that provides up to 40% of our drinking water during droughts.
And be it known that there is pavement that has been developed that is semi-permeable, but it's expensive.
Yeah, and there's also warehouses that are not being used.
Yeah.
So this is a definite no. And there you go. That's my report for the week.
Thank you, fellow worker.
Thank you. And I apologize for the rush.
Does it help for people to still go to Tacoma City Council meetings?
Mm-hmm. It always helps. It always helps. And you can go to county council meetings. So, yeah. There is an event that's planned tomorrow, and I'll be tabling at it. And although they won't hear it in time for this, I'm sure they'll be back again. Not Wapato Park, but Wapato Hills Park. From 5:30 to 7, people will be canvassing the neighborhood, and I and another member of CAS will be tabling for people who come to the park to hand out information. You're welcome to come.
Thank you, fellow worker.
Yeah.
I just have a couple of brief announcements for all of our fellow listeners out there. First, the big one, there is going to be a local organizer training hosted by the IWW. It's going to be in Bremerton, and the specific dates for that are September 28th through the 29th. If you're interested in getting organizer training so that you can learn how to organize your workplace and get a union with good pay, good benefits, good time off, all the benefits that come with just being a member of a union.
Pension,
thank you. Feel free to reach out to the Tacoma branch. That's tacoma@iww.org. And if you put in the tagline of your email, I'm interested in OT101 training, we can send you the registration form and we can get you in that classroom in Bremerton and you can learn how to organize your workplace. It's one of the best programs that our union provides for all of its members. So big shout out for that.
And Noah is pointing at you over the radio, which is hilarious.
What was that, fellow worker Gordon?
Yeah, just to be clear, Kitsap does not yet have a chartered IWW branch. They've decided, I live in Bremerton, they've decided to become an organizing committee of the Seattle branch. Mm-hmm. So an upside to that is the fact that they're going to be getting a couple of very good facilitators, good instructors, if you will, for the OT101. It's very useful training. I've been to it a couple of times in different branches, and it's well worth it.
And the other really brief announcement I have for upcoming events, on the same weekend of the 28th through the 29th of September, there's going to be the Anarchist Book Fair.
And yay!
Both of the Seattle and Tacoma branches will be there tabling. That's going to be 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. And that's going to be at the Vera Project. That's V-E-R-A Project.
Come by and see us. We would love to meet you.
Get your free literature, get some cute stickers, get some cute buttons. We can even sign you up to be a union member on the spot if you want to go about it that way. It's a great event that our union has been involved in for the past several years, and we hope to see you there.
For us out-of-towners, where is and what is the Vera Center?
That is the Vera Project.
It's at the Seattle Center.
Northwest corner.
Yeah.
Next to the Opera House.
Oh.
I'm actually going to look this up really quick. Project. Okay. The Vera Project is a live music venue in Seattle, Washington. It's at 305 Harrison Street, Seattle, Washington.
And there's no signs for that number on the outside of the buildings.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Outside of the sales center? Nope.
It's really a fun event.
You can't find it that way.
I look forward to going every year.
Mm-hmm. It's been years since I've been there.
You should come up.
Maybe I will.
Do we have anything else to add, or do we want to close out?
No, I think we want to close out because you can get your hair done.
Thank you. And I know you got to pick up people at 4.
Yeah.
Well, fellow workers, that's about the end of our radio show today. We just want to thank you from the Tacoma IWW to you for tuning in. This has been a production of the Tacoma branch of the Industrial Workers of the World, and we are very thankful to our broadcasters, 101.9 KTAH, 95.3 KTQA, and 94.9 KZAX. We want to thank everybody for tuning in, and solidarity.
And I hope you had a very productive Labor Day.
Thank you, and happy belated Labor Day as well. Solidarity.
Solidarity.